Our next speaker is Hemani Banerjee. She's also not teaching at York University during the strike. She's written a couple of recent books, The Dark Side of the Nation on Multiculturalism and Thinking Through Essays on Marxism, Feminism, and Anti-Racism. Hemani.
So I'm thrilled to see so many people in this room. Obviously, something very good is going on out there. The spirit is moving. To have so many people in this room in the name of a conference on rebuilding the left, you know, makes me happy to see you all here. And I'm glad to have the opportunity of joining my voice with others in this project of rebuilding the left. Though I have to say my emphasis lies on building rather than on the prefix re, because I think a lot of building of covering ground has to be done before we can talk of having a large and consolidated left. I do think there's a lot of building to be done, and the crucial issue here is one of dialogue, of beginning a conversation, and the good thing is that this conference has taken just that initiative. The idea is, of course, to engage many voices, many political desires and demands, and yet not to lose oneself in a quagmire of liberal pluralism and to be able to link the notion of alternatives to that of opposition. They're not the same. A good dialogue involves both speaking and listening. To hear in particular the voices of those and issues which have not been prominent in the traditional left in Canada. Of course, there is an element of risk-taking here, because there is no guarantee that the interlocutors may like or agree with what they hear. But there is no shortcutting of this process. If being left is to be more than a state of mind, but a practice in the world out there of widely based political organization, we cannot shortcut this dialogue. But it also means vexing traditional definitions of what being left means for all of us. So I'll begin to unsettle this common sense of being left by saying that traditional left politics in Canada, Toronto in particular, that I'm familiar with, the politics of class consciousness and class struggle that we identify the left with, has not sufficiently addressed concerns of non-white peoples, of women like myself, for example. Though gender, race, and class is paid attention to a degree, as a theoretical formula, a mantra, as some people say, in actuality, they have not been read through each other effectively enough or organized upon. Take, for example, race and class relations. I don't think that it's possible in a country like Canada, an evolving white settler colony into some form of liberal democracy, to talk about how class is actually formed without speaking of historical and present, direct and indirect kinds of gendered racialization. Sexist racism is intrinsic to the socioeconomic organization of this imperialist patriarchal capitalism. And it is apparent to all practitioners of life in Canada and the United States, in North America, as it is called. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. The three old ladies who recognized in me, in an elevator, a cleaner for their building, were clearly able to put gender, race, and class together. As did also a receptionist in a doctor's office who asked if I were a real doctor. The other part of this is to recognize that this racialization involves all of us. I mean all of us, black and white. The same stroke that darkens some implicitly whitens others. The peculiarities of all these cultural and social formations, common senses and hegemonies, that constitutes class, capital, and the state of capital, that creates our political unconscious, in my opinion, needs to be thought through more extensively and more in depth. To say this is not a matter of haranguing the left, this audience from the outside. Because you see, as a certain kind of a left person, as an anti-racist, feminist, Marxist, I speak from within too. But I'm not comfortable with the political unconscious of the self-identified Marxist tradition that I have lived with in 30 years in Canada. I have to leave behind too much of my own self, my life, and lives of other people like me when I have tried to belong to join this left. I have to query the common sense of Canadian Marxism if I have to become part of this rebuilding process. I have to point out that being left, in my sense, entails naming absences, identifying gaps in thinking about the social and the political, and seeing this as an irreducible condition of being left, in being able to actually see how class in Canada just can't happen without patriarchal racialization. This brings me to the topic of anti-racist politics. And I want to point out that it is vital to the politics of class struggle. It is important to recognize that the mixed class consciousness of Canadians is textured with race consciousness in various forms. So the left has to see and act upon the realization that anti-racism is not about being good to less privileged others. It is as much a fight against social organization of class, of whiteness as well as blackness. It is important to avail of the discourse of rights and equality, but also with an awareness that disarticulating them from the notion of class, they may fall into the pit of race relations, of official multiculturalism, rather than being truly anti-racist. That can only happen if we socialize rather than only economize or culturalize the notion of class to see how race and gender are the organizational grounds of class itself. This politics, needless to say, has its opposite in the petty bourgeois politics of ethnic and race consciousness. State patronage of community creation through cultural nationalism, which engages in religious fundamentalism to dire consequences for those who are included within the definition of the community, needs to be challenged by the kind of left politics that I'm talking about. In this context, sexual orientation, rights of women to their own bodies and minds become important, because such cultural nationalisms in the name of God and community produce violence against women, gays and lesbians, and the secular forces of those very communities themselves. Similarly, bourgeois or petty bourgeois feminism, which cannot see beyond gender or patriarchy, has to be challenged. What Australians have called femocracy is not an answer to the oppression of women tied to the coattails of race and class. In the false dualism of politics, which speaks in terms of either or, that is, of race or class, of culture or economy, or in the limited petty bourgeois upwardly mobile politics of race, ethnicity, and gender identities, there is not much room left for the left. The sharpest edge of race, gender politics without class in this bourgeois, petty bourgeois context lies in the fights around representation and inclusivity in a very narrow sense. But there is a tendency to see this language of inclusivity and representation and representational politics from this point of view as being radical, the project of moving from the margin to the center as being revolutionary somehow. And yet, what inevitably creates and constantly proliferates marginality is not explored and challenged in this limited way of thinking about representation. Nor is there any recognition of the fact that in a social pyramid of capitalist organization, the top is necessarily narrow. There is no room at the top for everybody. So all that jockeying for power at the middle level in the name of inclusion in the name of difference and identity may have an atmosphere of intense political activity, but it's far from being left. To overcome this gap between complexly and constantly creative social relations of power that we have coded as class, gender, and race, one needs to look closely at the texture of our everyday life. It becomes obvious at times, if we do so, how at all sides of the social, cultural, economic, and political, class comes to life. I felt this very strongly when working as an expert witness in a case where race, within quotes, had to be built into a charge of sexual harassment at a workplace. It gave me an insight into the practicalities of how labor markets are created and segmented on race-gender grounds, how the workings inside a factory follows the same pattern of that general economy, the international economy, and as well as the state, and how sexist racism determines practices of not only the employers of a black woman or a man, but also those of white male and female co-workers. A general sexist racism that permeates the society as a whole, I felt, became sexualized and worked in tandem with the normalization of types of labor expected from different social groups racialized in this society. It became clearer to us, those who worked on the case, that the working class in Canada is both fragmented and ordered in a pattern along the established grooves of race and gender. So what should we do? Among many tasks at hand, I just want to address a few. And Sam Gindin has spoken about this in another way as well. A very important one, I think, and not because I'm an academic, but a Marxist, is the need to rethink in order to rebuild. I refer to the notion of praxis, Marx's belief in creating a reliable knowledge for change. This knowledge for me is about understanding the social, the ground for all organization and mobilization. This means getting together in smaller and larger groups in an ongoing basis for developing a political understanding of using various media to project these understandings and these visions, and I emphasize visions. To organize on the ground of actualizing democracy, inquiring into the established patterns of political entitlements and participation, to look at the nature of citizenship whose hierarchical character comes through even from such terminology as being Canadian or immigrant, or from the notion of Canadianness, to look at this otherness in ideology of the nation and its state and figure out strategies of challenge. This can begin by studying the politics of the First Nations, for example, the Aboriginal peoples of Canada and their struggles, and to ask how and why our political world is divided between subjects and citizens. How else, without using this distinction between subjects and citizens, can we understand the state's violence against the poor or non-white communities, the Aboriginal people, the dispossessed in any sense in society? While we're doing that, we can expand our resistance against what Constance Backhouse has called color-coded laws of Canada regarding immigration, refugee laws, laws of decertification of credentials. We might understand how the working class is reproduced in Canada on race, gender, and nationality grounds if we were to do so. I want to also draw attention to labor politics in Canada on the ground of race and gender issues, and indeed, even in class terms. It is not a secret that labor movement in Canada has a legacy of anti-immigrant sentiment to deal with. And as the self-proclaimed feminist and women's movement of the mainstream has also sidelined the issue of racism, I might justifiably speak to the paucity of the social movement's outreach among people of color, as they're called, as we are called, by not addressing issues of concern to them and having very few organizational venues or devices pertaining to them, as well as seeing issues around racism among the workers themselves as being divisive. But if we don't see them, they're not going to go away. They're going to come back in strange political formations and continue to haunt the labor movement of this country. So the labor movement, for example, without any overt anti-immigrant expression, can still achieve an absence and a non-representation at various levels of labor. The problem is further complicated by lack of organization among lowest levels of menial and flexible workers, which happens to be very often job ghettos of non-white labor, particularly people, women of color. I want to also draw attention to the need for expanding the women's movement to involve non-white women, to increase the presence and concerns of such women who are subject to racism and sexist racism and homophobia. We need to ask how our movement can address the triple oppression of women who are working class and racialized while also paying attention to the oppression through the issue of sexuality, which further intensifies our oppression. We need to examine and counter-organize against the media in relation to their creation of a racialized perception of people in society, of mediating the kind of oppressions that I have spoken about so far. Here, the implication of culture in politics and cultural politics needs to be specially highlighted, as the role of the media in creating our political unconscious is crucial. We also need to expand, draw our attention to the need for anti-poverty organization among those subjects, not citizens of Canada, who are not necessarily homeless in the sense of being on the street, which they may also be on, but they're also homeless in being far away from where they originated, refugees, illegals, immigrants subject to extreme poverty, daily racism and degradation inflicted by the state, who live in the high-rise and other urban slums of Toronto and its outskirts. And above all, we have to link our struggles on different grounds and find their commonalities. It's not going to be easy, but we have to look for those links, those grounds for commonalities to organize this, our solidarity, to resist global capitalism, as Sam Gindin has said, and I won't go over it. We also, and we have had some examples in Seattle, Windsor, or Prague, we need to intensify those. So there are many more ways, many more suggestions and ways to deepen our considerations of these issues that I've raised. But I have to end here. In conclusion, I'd like to say that we can and we need to evolve a politics around beyond segregated single-issue politics and single-issue analysis. Even when engaged in a specific struggle in a particular site, when we're dealing with what appears to be only one issue, we have to keep the bigger picture in mind, informing any issue we work with a broader political understanding. We have to engage in an active dialogue, the theme with which I began, I go back to that, in the way I suggested above. This may open ways to make a truly inclusive politics, not the kind of inclusivity that we've talked about of upward mobility, but a truly inclusive left politics possible without condescension or erasures of people. Thank you.